Blog Talk Radio.
Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman vs. MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Hello, how are you doing today? I hope I find you feeling healthy on this Thursday, August 19th, 2021. This is Dave here with Nate. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, Dave? I am doing just fine. Looking forward to another great evening of talking some baseball.
Just reminding everybody out there, I know we get some calls from time to time. The number is 929-477-2759, 929-477-2759, if you want to give us a shout. Boy, what a week of baseball. I love to say it every week. I'll say it yet again. We've seen a lot of changes in the standings, a lot of momentum shifts, some crazy tweets from some owners. We're going to change it up a little bit. Everybody likes a good change up, very important arsenal pitch for most pitchers, and we'll stay on brand with that with the show. And we're going to let Nate read off the scores and talk about what's happened today, what's happening today, and what will happen later today. Nate, take it away with the scores.
All right. In your early action this evening, we have the Angels in a barn burner outlasting Detroit 13-10. Angels 62-61, game above 500. Tigers fall to 58-65. Miguel Cabrera still searching for that milestone home run number 500, although he did have a couple of hits today at 4 RBI, so even though he didn't hit it out of the park, still having himself a game and a half. Mariners keeping pace in the AL wild card race. They beat Texas 9-8-11. Fred Manfred's extra innings rule, not able to get it done in the 10th inning with the second man starting on second bases. Neither team was able to score. Another extra innings affair, Houston 6, Royals 3. It was 3-3 going into extras before Houston decided they were done playing around and just put the game away. Athletics also keeping pace in the wild card hunt. They down the White Sox 5-4, kind of an irrelevant score for the White Sox. They are at 71-51. Nobody in the AL Central is catching them. The Athletics are 69-53. They're right on the heels of the Astros out there in the AL West. So that's a fight for that division and a fight for the wild card. Other early action scores, Diamondbacks 41-81 take out the Phillies 6-2. Phillies fall to 61-60. True to form, nobody wants to win the AL East. The Diamondbacks just really don't want that number one pick. And the other game that happened, Tampa Bay 7, they're up to 75-47, seem to be walking away with the AL East. Orioles lose their 15th straight, 7-2, drop to 38-82. They are now 2.5 games ahead of the Diamondbacks for the number one overall pick in 2022. And they're only 6 games shy of their franchise record, 21 consecutive losses. They did that to open the 1988 season. So as an Orioles fan, you kind of look at it and you're like, okay, can we catch that or not? Games currently in action. You got the Reds up 4-1 on the Marlins in the top of the 7th. Marlins have 2 men on. They are threatening, could potentially tie that game. Cardinals and Brewers in a fight in the NL Central, tied 1-1. Brewers 74-47, Cardinals 61-58. Brewers seemingly have the NL Central locked up, but the Cardinals looking to make it interesting. Brewers right now have men on second and third with 2 out. They're looking to kind of break this one open in the top of the 4th. Later on tonight, The Mets, 60-60, taking on the Dodgers, 75-46. That'll feature Taijuan Walker against Mr. Neville. Mr. Neville, I'm not familiar with you. What is your first name? Corey Neville. I should probably know you. You're 2-0 over the 2.89 ERA on the year. So that's your nightcap. And then there's one other game currently going on. But, Dave, that involves your boys, so I'm going to let you discuss that game.
Well, right now we have the Yankees facing the Twins. And Nate, I got to say the Yankees are really putting it all together. And that's they were up 6-0. The game has gotten a little bit tighter, 6-3. Yankees have done a little bit of everything as of late, not just tonight, but they've been actually hitting the ball to places other than the stands. They've been getting good, solid pitching. James Taillon had the start tonight and was pitching very well, been getting good pitching from really, really everybody. Nothing great. But again, right now the Yankees are up 6-3, and that, Nate, brings me to one of the places I wanted to start, which was the AL East itself, because it seems to me, or it feels to me, that the tone of those teams, the two teams who've been battling it out all year, it feels like, and really for my entire life, the Red Sox and the Yankees, have begun to trend in completely opposite directions. The Red Sox have fallen out of the lead for the wild card and conceded that to the Yankees after the Yankees took a 3-game sweep against Boston. And, you know, it's a cliche, Nate. I think we all hear in sports, sometimes you just can't look at the scores and really get a feel for what happened. But I think this is one case where it does dictate it, where the Yankees were able to simply take a sweep from the Red Sox. They won the first game 5-3, 2-0, 5-2. It sounds like I'm reading tennis scores, but it just felt like the Yankees just won them all. They didn't beat up the Red Sox. They didn't really win super close games. None of them were one-run games. They were all 2- or 3-run games. But they did what they had to do to win. And I just want to talk about those games a little bit. I mean, Yankees took the Red Sox 5-3. Loaisiga was able to get the Yankees really in good positions to win when they needed to get it done. Chad Green also had contributions. The shutout in the second game was great. You had Luke Voit and Giancarlo Stanton homering in that one, and that was a game that really featured the long ball. And then you have a guy like Velasquez stepping it up in that third game to complete the sweep. It was what you wanted out of the Yankees. And by the way, in that last game in the series, Andrew Heaney pitched 7 innings, and Rizzo has continued to be a great thing for the Yankees. It's been absolutely incredible. But Nate, you know, before I really dive into the Yankees and the Red Sox, I got a caller here, so let's pick up the line. And caller, you should be on. And how you doing?
I'm great. This is Art Vandelay.
Oh boy,
I'm calling because I can't believe that the Baltimore Orioles have lost 15 games in a row. Okay, I can't believe it.
Have you really been
21 games in a row? This is just absolutely horrendous. I was listening to the I was listening to by accident, mind you, the Mike Greenberg radio show today on a competitor of yours. Obviously, I won't mention who it is.
I'm a big fan of his, to be honest.
Oh, you are? Okay, anyway. All right, so
we all have our flaws.
I just literally, I was flipping through, and what I got was he said something. They were talking about tanking in baseball, and I literally had just turned to the station, and the first thing I heard him say is that the Baltimore Orioles should be not just regulated, but to AA because they couldn't win at AAA. And that's,
I don't know about that,
his words. And it's
little,
just an embarrassment.
A little bit of hyperbole out of Mr. Greenberg on that one.
Well, I mean, look, he works for the works for the mothership, the worldwide leader. You know, I mean, he works in the same company that hires Stephen A. Smith, for crying out loud, right? So hyperbole is basically their brand at this point, but it's embarrassing, and I hope to God, if any Oriole fans out there think that this team, and I've read this on various online Oriole propaganda sites, that they could be competitive by, say, 2023 or so, they're just laughing at themselves. This is pathetic and is terrible. They've lost every single one of these games of the 15-game losing streak by more than one run, which is the longest streak since 1900.
Wow.
I will just leave it at that. It's been real.
The Orioles, it's not the longest streak since 1900. The Orioles lost 21 games to open the 1988 season, so that was 33 years ago. But your point is taken. This is the first team since the 1900 season to have two consecutive 14-game losing streaks. So I think that might be where you were headed on that one. The other stat that you kind of threw out there, I have to double-check what the actual run differential is, but right off the top of my head, I want to say it's about 137. I think the run differential, something crazy like that, the run differential just in this losing streak, Art and Dave, is more severe than the run differential that some teams have on the entire season. So, yeah, it's really bad baseball being played in Baltimore right now, but they did kind of say this was going to happen. Like, we all, the GM, the ownership, like everybody kind of said, we're not worried about the Major League product now. We're not worried about the Major League product next year. Probably really not worried about the Major League product in 2023, although, they have talent in AAA, they have talent in AA that should be up by then. But, Art, I know you really don't want to delve into all that. We don't really want to talk about the prognostication of what the Orioles could be going forward. At this, in terms of just what the 2021 season is, I think as an Orioles fan, you gotta have fun with how abysmal can it get. You know, if you're not laughing,
fun.
You're crying.
there's
fun elements to this. Like,
how
you
much
tune in
tequila
because,
is there?
If you run out of tequila, you can switch to whiskey.
Art, I got a question for you because you're a diehard, and I love it, and you've always got great takes on these. So, they've got you for life, right? Right? That's inarguable, right? No matter what, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have to put your hat on, say they said, hey, we want a hardcore fan to tell us not how do we fix the product on the field, but if you wanted to see a culture change from the Orioles, I mean, A, do you think that's something that needs to – I hate the phrase culture change, but if you need a momentum shift, how do you get that started? Do you want to start with a young core, or would you rather bring in a group of veterans who immediately brings the team to, not a 15-game losing streak, but maybe even closer to 500,
right,
with the understanding that it's not anything to sustain? What do you want as a fan?
I get what you're saying. I happen to also be a fan of the Washington football team. And so, obviously, my life sucks as a sports fan. All right.
Thoughts
so,
and prayers.
Right. Thanks. So, I look at it's the top. Dan Snyder, it's the Angelos family. And so, if you want to talk about culture change, I know we had our little run there from 2012 to 2016, but you look at it before that, it was 14 years of ineptitude, and we're in that again. So it's not about necessarily – and here's the thing. I don't think it's about being, the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and all blah, 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 and spending, $500 million worth of contracts. Because let's face it, they don't have enough players kind of already existing on the team where you add those players will make you great. So that would just be adding good players to a bunch of bad players. It's not going to do anything for you.
Right.
It starts at the top. It's an organizational acceptance of failure.
Yeah.
But, Art, where the franchise is, doesn't the franchise feel like this really doesn't feel different to you? You mentioned that it was 14 years of ineptitude. And before I dive into this too quickly, before I dive too deep into this, I do need to correct someone. I said minus 131 on the run differential on the losing streak. It's actually minus 92. So it's not as bad as I originally painted it. Maybe we get to minus 132 by the time we hit. By the time we lose our 21st game in a row, we'll be up to 132. We'll be good there. Anyway, you really don't think that the franchise feels like it's in a different position than where it was pre-2012? Like, pre-2012,
Here's my question. This is my answer. Are the past handful of Oriole teams, the last 2, 3, 4 years, they're worse than any of those teams in the 14-year period? And they were really, really bad in those 14 years.
Well, right, because during those 14
and
years,
everybody
the Angels family just tried to throw money at the problem. They did what some people were asking for. They signed the Sammy Sosa's. They brought Rafi Palmeiro back when he tested positive for steroids. They brought in Miguel Tejada, Garrett Atkins.
They spent money
money at the problem
to get
people into the stadium.
They brought in guys that were, like, way past their prime, that were juicing like Palmeiro, right? And they were bringing in – so we're not talking about – I don't want to bring in 38-year-old so-and-so just to have him on the team. No, I mean, when I'm talking about throwing money, it's when the Yankees and the Red Sox and Dodgers do, what do? They throw money at that 28-year-old whose first contract is up.
Actually,
so the Orioles were just signing a dude for a year or two.
Wait,
so I'm not saying that money right now is not.
All right. No, I got a quick question. So I know exactly where you're going with this, and I do have a question for you before we talk about the – you know, the structure of the teams or whose job it is or it isn't. You know, one of the reports I saw that came out this week was in The Athletic, and it was saying that they are proposing a salary floor of $100 million and actually lowering that luxury tax number to $180 million. So you're looking at trying to force teams between spending $100 to $180 million and making it a floor and a ceiling. You know, as a fan of somebody whose teams around them, like the Yankees, like the Red Sox, and to an extent, media-wise, you know, we all hear about the Dodgers. How do you feel about something like that as a fan of a team who doesn't spend? Art, I'd really love to hear your take on that.
Okay, so if you're talking about you tell the Orioles next year, hey, you got to spend $100 million, when their lineup, I think it's roughly in like the $30 or $40 million range right now, okay?
Right.
So to spend this amount of money, so first of all, where could they even spend the money to get a free agent who's any good to come play for them, as bad as they are? So secondly, who on the team currently deserves that kind of a pay raise? So I don't understand how they could even spend $100 million because nobody's going to come play for them unless you give your current guys money that they have clearly not earned. Maybe in 5 years from today, a floor could be helpful for a team like the Orioles once they finally have Adley Rutschman up and Rodriguez, the pitcher, and all these kind of guys, once they come up, maybe in 5 years, yes, that might help the Orioles because they could keep those guys and maybe add a couple of guys in free agency that want to play with those young guys. But as of right now, in the next year or two, how would they even spend $100 million?
Well, I mean, you've got a bunch of guys that are pre-arbitration. They're under no obligation to pay them league minimum. They could, you know, double that salary, make, you know, your guys like Keegan Aiken, Hunter Harvey, Austin Hayes, Travis Lakins. You could give
you're going to pay Hunter Harvey to go pitch 4 innings and have Tommy John surgery or something? I mean, give me a break.
You could pay Cedric Mullins. You could give Mullins an extension. You could – You could pay John
okay, look,
you
Cedric,
could pay Ryan Mountcastle. It's going to take a lot of money to get there.
But I think I need to see a second season from Cedric to see that if this was just an anomaly versus this is kind of the player that he is. So I wouldn't necessarily go out of my way to throw some cash at him.
I think that's fair. What I would like them, you know, Dave, if we're going to steer this a little bit, I would like to see them kind of open up the salary floor and go beyond just your major league roster. And I'd like to see them do something where maybe they say, look, it's $100 million and minor league player salary. Yeah, organizationally. So minor league salaries count, because that might be a great way to get some of these minor league players paid the way that they should be.
Isn't that, okay. if I'm
now,
not mistaken, what the Pirates tried to do?
Now, but
and that
here's
got them
thing.
In trouble.
I think that that could work. Because the Orioles have been doing the whole underslot thing when it comes to the draft. So maybe at that point they would be forced to maybe not do that and would draft maybe what is actual, you know, worthy of the pick that they have. So
underslot
I can actually see that as a help.
No. The underslot overslot has nothing to do with what their salaries are. It's entirely what their signing bonus is. You get like if you're a first round pick, your salary, your signing bonus is going to be, let's say, depending on where you're taken in the first round, it's $10 million. But if you're a second round pick, your slot is $5 million. So what the Orioles have been doing lately, they've been taking guys that are projected to be like round two number one, but they're taking him in the first round because they know that they can, you know, they can pay him less to get him to come to the team. They're still going to pay, like, his salary is still going to be pretty much set. He's going to be making league minimum wherever he goes.
Well, then why can't you tie in somehow that your bonus that you're paying for draftees is not incorporated in this $100 million floor? If you're going to go ahead and go and think about doing it to pay minor leaguers, then why not have it wrapped up with the draft as well?
Well, because there's a bunch of guys in the minor leagues that aren't paid these mega signing bonuses. These are, like, a lot of your minor leagues are filled out with guys that are making, you know, maybe when they signed the signing bonus, it was maybe $100,000, or they're just an undrafted,
you know,
signee that
Nate
wanted to skip college.
Now, can I just say this, though?
Well,
there was a bit of good news with the Orioles with Chris Davis retiring. So I will say that was a high note of the week.
So, we still owe him money next year, though.
I know. We have our new Bobby Bonilla. Whatever. Fine.
Hey, you know, and I just got to say, Art, I appreciate you calling in. It's always great to hear from you. Don't hesitate to ever give us a shout, dude.
Thank you.
You know, Nate, I always wonder when I look at like an organization like the you know, like the Orioles, about the different ways that they could build. And if you did have something like that minimum, you know, one of the things that you and I had talked about in the past was how to change sort of a whole organization and how to get players who aren't really playing baseball right now. I, you know, you'd often hear when I was a kid, like, if you're the best athlete in your school, you're going to play basketball, baseball, football, and all that, especially when you're young in high school and trying to get as much exposure as possible. And I think if you really do start doing what you guys have been talking about and paying – look, to me, I'm not an Orioles fan, and honestly, a lot of the names you and Art mentioned are just not names I know. I mean, you're talking about the minors within the Orioles system, and I can't imagine they're terribly well-known names amongst – the baseball world, right? But the pro to that is if you're giving those guys a bunch more money, if you're a kid in high school right now and you're going to go play baseball, well, listen, that's one way to attract talent, and that's better. That's more important now than ever, which is just throw the dollars at the kids. And it sounds like a weak strategy, but it is a strategy, and I think that's one way to maybe bring talent back to the game, and it feels kind of shady, and it's nothing nobody likes, but if you just chuck money at the people who play the game, you know, a super, super talented and athletic kid would choose baseball over football. And I'm just going to look at a guy like Kyler Murray, who's the, you know, who is a very high draft pick for baseball, and we all know he was a very high draft pick for the Cardinals. And I think it's very fascinating to see how he very, very clearly was going to go with the much more dangerous football, although it's obviously much more popular. And I, you know, 20 years ago, I think we would have all been shocked. You know, I remember, was it Chad? Remember Chad Henne, the quarterback for Michigan?
yeah.
He was the quarterback for Michigan football, and he very well could have played quarterback in the NFL. But he made a conscious decision and basically chose to be a minor leaguer for a number of years for the Yankees. And I think he still earned, you know, more as a minor leaguer for the Yankees than he would have elsewhere. Maybe Tebow should have gone right to baseball instead of trying the football thing. It would have saved us all a lot of time. Now, Nate, you know, I just got to ask, and I'm watching my Yankee game right here, and Luke Voit just had a very solid at-bat. And Anthony Rizzo also in the lineup today. And those two guys are first basemen. Now, Nate, I got to ask, because this is something we had been talking about. You know, Luke Voit was, you know, the guy was was a league leader in the home runs in this, you know, the shortened season. So he proved very well that he's a very good baseball player. A lot of Yankee fans on Twitter, and we all know Twitter is not a sample size of the world, thank God. But we all know that a lot of folks were hoping that Luke Voit would get traded at the trade deadline, maybe flip him for a pitch or something. But the Yankees held on to him and at the same time acquired Rizzo. And now they have this situation where Rizzo, I mean, let's be honest, Nate, Anthony Rizzo is more important than the Yankees, especially because of the side he stands at the plate. But also he's fantastic defensively. Not like Luke Voit is much worse, but I mean Anthony Rizzo he's a very good first baseman. I mean, there's no, you know, that's important for the Yankees. Yankee fans who've had, you know, such great first baseman Mattingly, you've had Tino Martinez, you've had Mark Teixeira. So how do you feel though, Nate, about a guy like Luke Voit saying, "Hey, I shouldn't get any less playing time. I don't, and if, in a sense, I don't care that you have Anthony Rizzo. First base is my job, and this is my place. This is my home." And he sounds like he's very upset with the Yankees for having gone out and gotten an Anthony Rizzo to usurp his place at first. So, do you have a problem with what Luke Voit said or how he said it?
I mean, on the one hand, it's, you know, power to him. You love the confidence out of the guy, but it's also just not a realistic take. Like Luke, you had a great 2020 when in a season that, for all intents and purposes, just doesn't matter. It doesn't count for anybody except the Dodgers. They get to claim their World Series, but nobody else, when it comes to like statistical comparison to everything else, nobody is citing 2020. Nobody cares. So, like, yeah, you had a great season. It looked like you might be coming on, but, like, to pretend that you're better than Anthony Rizzo, even in a down year, no, sorry, bro. Anthony Rizzo is the better first baseman. And to be quite honest, they wouldn't have gone out and traded for Anthony Rizzo if you were doing your job all season. Now, yeah, it's great that
now,
like,
he was
the trade deadline,
by the way, at the trade deadline, to be fair.
Okay, you're right. In his defense, he was hurt. But, like, okay, it's great that you've come back and now you're producing. But, you know, Luke, you're either looking at a DH split with Stanton or, although I don't know how that would be a split since you're both right-handed hitters, but, you know, if you really think that you're better than Rizzo when it comes to the off season, go sign somewhere else and prove it. If I'm Luke's agent, I probably am sitting him down and be like, "Look, I get it. You're pissed. When you play, go out, do the best you can. Every time you're there, don't overswing, don't overdo it because you're going to get yourself in trouble that way. But, you know, just go out, play your game, and then when the off season rolls around, we'll go do our thing somewhere else with somebody who does want to play. But for right now, just help your team get to where your team's going to go and really just, you know, sit down. You're not Anthony Rizzo. This guy's like, you know, he's a how many time all-star. He's already got his World Series ring. Love the confidence out of Luke. love the confidence in himself, but it's almost like the little league dad that's getting upset that he's like, oh, my kid's just as good as the superstar player. No, your kid's not. Your kid is a decent player, but he's not the all-star. Go away, kid.
He's not Banksy from the Mighty Ducks, you know.
Exactly.
Boy, that's quite an interesting take. I do like the competitiveness. I think no matter what, I've always loved guys like the, you know, with just that Jordan-esque type fire that can even make up stuff just to make him be crazy and go for it. And I think that might be something that Luke Voit might be doing, which is in his head intensifying the rivalry. That's not the right word, but intensifying the fight for the position. And, you know, in a sense, if you're Aaron Boone and you understand the Yankees manager Aaron Boone and you understand what Luke Voit's doing to almost pump himself up, you say, look, that's great. Harness it, man. Every time you're at bat, pretend the ball is Anthony Rizzo's face at first base. You know, just something crazy like that, right? And who knows? Maybe that builds the fire. But the thing that I would take issue with is the way he did it, and it was publicly. If you're really that upset about a guy taking over your position, I mean, go talk to the manager. I mean, that's it. And you asked the question, you know, how are you going to handle the lineup? I do believe, I forget honestly if it was today or yesterday, but, you know, you're going to have to put Stanton in the field actually some. And then, you know, like right now, you've got Rizzo and Voit in the same game, with meaning one of them is going to be your DH. And what, you know, are you going to start, you're treating Stanton in a way, I think this is what's bothering me about Stanton on the Yankees, is you're treating him in a way like the Angels, I think, wanted to treat Pujols towards the end, which is like, all right, guy, we'll trot you out there every so often. Like he's some old hag who kind of shows up. Granted, the dude was hitting some moonshots earlier this week. So it's a very interesting balance that the Yankees have. But the only thing I can say right now is that Gallo and Rizzo need to be in there almost every day to break up the lineup. And that's not good for Voit, is how important having a balanced lineup is. And I don't care what team you are, whether you're the 2008 Dodger or the 2003, not Dodgers, the Tigers, whichever one of what team that won that lost like 120 games or something, you know, it doesn't matter. You're still going to go out there and you should put out a balanced lineup. I think that just makes it makes a difference, especially now with these rules that the pitchers have. You really need to keep these pitchers on their toes. And one thing I don't think teams are doing, Nate, is making pitchers throw pitches. I would, as a Yankee fan, man, if I started to see a pitcher getting to like 60-ish pitches by the third or fourth inning, I was psyched. I wanted, the most important thing to me was seeing their starter pulled. But now it seems like teams are eager to go to their bullpen. So, Nate, I would love to know. I mean, do you think how important is a balanced lineup? You know, just a quick, you know, simple question. How important is that to you?
You know, it's not
really
as important to me as I guess it depends on how we define balanced lineup. Are we talking like, you know, lining up a guy that throwing out a lineup that goes left, right, left, right, left, right, one through nine? Is that what we're talking about? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in a sense, right. You know, and especially if you're building it for, you know, and if it's going to be slightly imbalanced, I completely understand that. But in that regard, you know, how are you going to do it in a place like Fenway versus a place like, you know, Tropicana Field? I think part of it is building a team for your own home field.
Yeah, you know, the lineup that just alternates left, right, that doesn't do a whole lot to me personally. I know Buck Showalter with the Orioles from 2012 to 2016 loved to do that. That was his, like, that was his little whoopee. He went to that every chance he could. And I don't know. I'm more concerned of having a balanced lineup of optimizing the guy's skills. So, like, I want my highest on-base percentage guy leading off. I want a left-handed hitter that puts the ball in play hitting second. I want my best hitter overall hitting third. I want my biggest power bat hitting fourth. I want my speed guy 7 through 9. And then like fifth, sixth, you know, if I can get a power bat 5-6 or, you know, a solid contact guy there or an OBP guy there, I'm happy. I don't really, outside of the two hole, I don't really care a whole lot about whether you're a left or a right-handed hitter, personally. And I just want the two-hole hitter to be left-handed because I'm trusting that my leadoff hitter is going to get on and open up the right side of the field for my two-hole hitter to yank a ball into the four-and-a-half hole, and I can move my leadoff hitter over to third to set him up for the three-hole hitter.
I mean, I understand where you're going with that, and you know, it sounds like you have very clear ideas of how you would build the lineup. But I'm just thinking, you know, also from a, you're just trying to keep the opposing pitcher off balance. It's not just about your guy. It's just as much about the other guy as it is yours.
True. But, you know, in the modern game, since you can't, you know, since the loogie is dead, the left-handed one-out only guy, since that's no longer a thing with this must-face three batters rule, I don't know that a left-right alternating lineup is really necessary because, you know, the guy's going to come in from the bullpen, he's going to face three guys no matter what. So, you know, if you're alternating left, right, it doesn't, yeah. So the manager is going to bring in the lefty to face your leadoff guy who's batting left-handed, gets him out, intentionally walks the next right-handed batter because he can't pitch to him, gets the next lefty out, and then, you know, he can get pulled, and then somebody else comes in. Like, I don't know that there's really that much of a competitive advantage gained by the alternating lineup anymore. Or if there is an advantage gained, I think it should be relatively simple to work around.
I mean, I would say the advantage is if you, and this is something nobody's doing, but if you keep your roster somewhat minimally flexible, then, you know, what I mean by flexible is you have more guys on your bench that you can swap in, maybe a switch hitter or something on the bench, which, you know, I'm very big into the philosophy of playing with. I mean, that was something Joe Torre would do, and I think he was a master at it, which was creating a lineup to not just face that pitcher but also face the bullpen. And I think that's part of it, too, is these teams today, I don't feel like they're as flexible as they could be in a lineup sense, because you're taking up so many roster spots in the bullpen. I think that's really the gist of why I'm so frustrated by the Yankees having not had a balanced lineup, and why it, you know, having two lefties in it now makes such a big difference. But, you know, Nate, one thing I wanted to also mention in addition to that salary minimum, we had some other couple of things that happened over the, you know, last couple of days in baseball. I want to ask you this one real quick question that I have to admit, I don't want to say that I laughed, but I laughed when I saw the headline that Lance Lynn of the White Sox was ejected for throwing a belt at an umpire during a foreign substance check. So it's exactly what it sounds like. The White Sox won their game 3-2 yesterday, last night, and you know, he was in the dugout roughly halfway through, you know, the fourth inning, and he tossed his belt at the third base umpire when he was doing a foreign substance check, and that was it. I mean, it wasn't anything that looked like threatening. He didn't take the belt off and, you know, go to whip anyone with it or anything, but he chucked the belt. It's one of those silly things that, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. I don't know. I just thought it was really funny. And he also got, Lance Lynn got very upset about the whole thing. Did you have a chance to see it?
So I have to admit, I didn't get a chance to see the actual video. So it sounds like you got to see the video replay or the video footage of it happening. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions that's going to influence my opinion on it, my rapid-fire opinion. Was he at all annoyed? Was it like a, oh, you're really going to check my box? Here, fine, take it. Like, not necessarily doing it maliciously, but, like, toss it. Was he tossing it to the umpire to comply, like, because the umpire asked for it? Or was he tossing it to the umpire, like, I can't believe you're actually asking to see my belt. Here, take it. How would you classify it?
Well, it was definitely a frustration throw. And I don't know if I can call a belt throw sarcastic, but it was. It was almost like a sarcastic little funny bat flip kind of. Yeah, it was like an I don't give a bleep, if I may, type motion.
Okay.
So nothing malicious, and he wasn't trying to hurt the guy.
Right, but, you know, a little bit of annoyance. In that case, I kind of take the approach of, you know what, guys? The only people you really have to be mad at are either yourselves or your fellow pitchers for bringing this up. Like, you kind of brought it on yourselves here because you were going outside the rules of baseball, and now Major League Baseball is cracking down on it. And if you're going to get upset at it, like, well, you know, sorry that you don't like playing within the rules. But did he have to be tossed for it? Probably not. I mean, if Max Scherzer can threaten to go, if Max Scherzer can threaten to go full drop trowel and Joe Girardi and get to stay in the game, maybe Lance Lynn, even though he tossed the belt, should have gotten to stay. It sounds like the umpire got touchy over it, but
I think it may have lightly grazed the umpire. It happened, like I said, he was in the dugout. The umpire was at the top of the steps, really, and it was just it wasn't like there was anything terribly there was no real animosity between the two until that point. And then when he threw him out, it started becoming uncomfortable. But some other things that we saw earlier was Shohei Ohtani hit his 40th home run. But more impressive, I don't know, equally impressive, I don't even know, just another crazy stat from him was not just that he hit his 40th home run, he threw an 8-inning game that night. I mean, it's just unreal. Another fantastic game by Ohtani. Continues to just light it up both on the field and off the field. And in the game, like I said, he hit his 40th home run. It was his only hit of the night. You know, obviously got the run in the ribby, but over 8 innings, he only allowed 6 hits, 1 run, and struck out 8. It's got an ERA, by the way, on the season of 2.79, which is ridiculous. I mean, you've got 40 home runs and you're throwing 2.79. I just got to say, you know, to Shohei Ohtani, I mean, I think right now he is clearly the AL MVP. I don't know who else it would be right now. And on the NL side, I think we've got some other interesting names in the NL MVP race. One of the guys I think who might want to start being in the conversation is Freddie Freeman, who hit his second career cycle in a game where the Braves swept the Marlins. But, Nate, there's another name, I think, who has something to say about the NL MVP. What do you think about Tatis getting the MVP at this point?
You know, I like it. I think the thing that's getting in his way is the amount of times he's been injured. But every time that he comes back from injury, what was it, the other night when he came back from injury, all he did was hit 2 more home runs while making his big,
right,
like playing his second ever game in the outfield. It's like, oh, okay, so you just are that good. I think for the NL MVP, I also think Manny Machado kind of works his way in there, because if Tatis ends up missing any additional time and the Padres can stay in this, well, I mean, they're not really in the wild card race, I guess, or they're not really in the division race anymore, but maybe they're, you know, hanging around the wild card race. And, you know, if they make noise in the playoffs, I think Manny Machado would be a very big part of that, and he would deserve some NL MVP votes.
So, how much do you, when you're looking at things like an MVP, how much do you take into account the standings?
Old school or new school?
Just right now. Like, if you're just straight up looking at, like, if you're at a bar, somebody says, hey, who do you think's the MVP? How much do you take into account if it's a good team or not?
I think the good teams are the ones – I think the players who are leading the good teams automatically are going to float to the top because they're just low-hanging, easy fruit. But it's when you – I do think – I don't know that I necessarily like that or agree with that idea, because – If there was a prerequisite that your team has to be in the playoff hunt or your team has to win the division to be eligible for an MVP, Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout would never win the award because the Angels are just deadpan average. Now, you don't want to call them garbage this year. They're a game above 500. They're doing okay. And I think I saw something earlier. Cedric Mullins is actually like fifth in AL MVP voting because he currently leads the American League in hits, even though he's on one of the worst teams in baseball history. So, like, you know, there are guys that are having just these insanely good statistical seasons, but they're on not great teams. Now, you have Shohei Ohtani out here doing, you know, every night he just sets some new baseball record. But then you have other guys, like, you know, when Cabrera hits his 500th home run, and, you know, when he gets to 3,000 overall hits and the Tigers end up finishing the season 500 or above, does he deserve AL MVP votes? I can definitely see the argument that he should, because he's having a great season. It's not like he was at 499 on opening day and he just kind of like happened to fall backwards into these milestones. He's actually having a really strong season, and the Tigers are a lot better than everybody thought they were going to be. So maybe, you know, maybe Cabrera deserves some AL MVP conversation. Jacob deGrom, even though the Mets are doing their playoffs and doing their best to lose the NL East, he's still the best pitcher in the National League. Why not give him some NL MVP votes?
No, I think that's a very good point. You know, I'm glad you mentioned the Mets. I mean, the Mets have just they've fallen off. I mean, they were right now they're at exactly 500. By the way, they're 60-60,
mm-hmm.
And it's really weird as a Yankee fan. I mean, I think you know I'm not one of these Yankee fans who just goes, oh yeah, we're, you know, the best right now. I still believe that the Yankees are a little bit of fool's gold. But you know what, Nate? There was a clip that popped into my head as I watched the Yankees sweep the Red Sox.
What is he doing?
He's beginning to believe.
And all I could think about was The Matrix when I saw them sweep the Red Sox and the Red Sox fall out. And all I could think of was Morpheus saying he's beginning to believe, because I told you, Nate, for the last couple of weeks that it's fool's gold. It's going to be fool's gold as they face the worst teams, teams that are settling back to earth, and they've got the hot weather, and they're starting to hit a lot of home runs. I don't want to fall into the trap where I think the Yankees are that good. I think the Tampa Bay Rays are an all-year-round team, and that's not actually unlike the Giants, who are an all-year-round team. Not unlike the Dodgers, and even the Padres, to a sense, are an all-year-round team. I mean, the Dodgers are ridiculous. I mean, at some point, you know, you could just have Trey Turner chilling on your bench. It's like, I think half of their strategy is to stack talent so nobody else has any. But it's really weird to see how both the Red Sox and the Mets have completely fallen off. And there's really haven't been any other teams I think of that have had long stretches of success and then just fallen off the table. I mean, you know, the Red Sox, for what it's worth, the Red Sox are still 69-54. Let's not pretend that they're doing some terrible amount. I mean, you know, despite their last games of their last 10, they're 4-6. Granted, they've lost three straight. The Yankees are on a 6-game winning streak, but the Rays are quietly chugging along like an engine with their 139 run differential. But you look at a team like, let's go back to the NL West. You've got the Giants, who have just maintained that momentum and that pace. You've got the Dodgers, who are, I just think, the most you know, there's no holes on that team. You know, you even look at the – I think some of their bench players are better than some other starters. And then in the NL Central, it's the Brewers, right? What's, you know, the Reds exist. And the NL East, it's the Braves. I really think the Braves – when they rebuilt that outfield, they really did, I think, a great job in terms of making sure that they're going to stay competitive and that they also can – maintain the success into the playoffs. I don't know if that roster though is good enough to win a bunch of series. But I mean, looking at their last couple series, I mean, they've swept the Marlins, they swept the Nationals, they took 2 out of 3 from the Reds, 2 out of 3 from the Nationals, swept the Cardinals, and then they had a couple of tough games against the Brewers. But I don't know.
They're,
something
they're
about the Braves.
They show up in Baltimore tomorrow, so there's 3 more wins. So sorry, Philly, sorry, Mets. You're not catching any ground on the Braves this weekend.
You know, that's what I love about baseball, though. There's just one of those weird games where it seems like the Orioles could put up, you know, 13-2, just because it's a weird night, and then the Orioles would go on to lose their next 12 or something.
The Orioles will put up 9 runs in the first 4 innings tomorrow night. They'll be up 9-0 in the fourth inning. They're going to lose the game 12-9.
Yeah, sounds about right. They've found special ways to lose. So Nate, the last little story I wanted to touch on before we call it a night. It's a sad one. I don't know why it makes me sad. I was never really a big baseball card guy. I have been more recently, but the MLB and the Players Association are making a new trading card agreement with Fanatics, and that will end their partnership with Topps, who they've been with since 70 years, since the 1950s. And I think we all know, you know, baseball cards obviously are not nearly as popular as they were. In a way, even though their top collectible value, I mean, I think I saw just a Honus Wagner card just sold for $6.6 million, if I have that number right in my head. But it is weirdly sad, I think, in a way, to see that Topps is no longer in the baseball card game. And I think Fanatics, you know, and for anybody out there who doesn't know, Fanatics runs, you know, the MLB shop, the NFL shop. I think they also do the NBA. I'm not sure about the NHL. But they kind of own that market. They own the consumer to or team to consumer relationship in terms of merchandise. And it's all licensing. It's all branding. And it just feels dirty, I guess, in a way that a traditional American icon like a Topps has given way to this company that specialized in selling new jerseys. Nate, I don't know. It made me a little sad. Did you feel anything when you read about that story? Or you're just like, whatever, baseball cards are baseball cards. I'm curious.
You know, I need more time to reflect on it before I think I really get a full-fledged emotional reaction to it. When I first saw it, it was something that just kind of hit me as like, oh, that's interesting. But now that I think, you know, you sent the story to me and my immediate reaction was, you know, I wonder whatever happened to my baseball card collection. I wonder if it's still in the basement of my parents' house. Because I am curious now, how will this affect, not that I have anything or that I ever had anything of significant value, but, you know, if you have a collection of these Topps cards, more valuable are they going to become now? You know, maybe not immediately, but let's say 10, 15, 20 years down the line, you go to a card show or you go to a secondary market and be like, oh, hey, I have this Topps card of this guy. I wonder if weirdly could be a good thing for the collector market.
For the resale market,
Does that make sense?
But
Yeah,
I get it, but that's definitely more from an industry standpoint. I guess I got to come clean,
right,
Nate. I'm working from home, and when I make my breakfast and stuff in the morning, I always put on Pawn Stars. I've really gotten into that show, And baseball cards come on it all the time. And it's just, I just discovered the show because, you know, I'm stuck in 2004 or something like that. But it's, you know, that's one of the things where I look at it and half the people come in there, they sell their baseball cards and they're like, all right, let's see how much cash I can get out of these. But then there's another group of people who come in and bring them and like, this is my childhood. This is everything that meant to me. These are, you know, these couple ones are all beat up. They were in the spokes of my car, you know, of my bicycle. But these ones I kept in the plastic and they were, you know, they were what I you know, looked at night. I read the scores, I read the you know, the lines on the guys, and they meant something to me. And there's really definitely a two different groups. And so I think the emotional folks, the ones who really have that connection to baseball cards from more of a collector, I think they'll definitely get more emotional about it. I know I still have my old baseball card collection at my parents' house in a drawer somewhere. And it just, it, you're right. It makes me kind of think, boy, next time I go over there, I gotta pull those out and look and see who's in there. You know, what rookies do I have? Cause it's something that I've been meaning to do. And this just really makes me want to do it. So yeah, I get that. And I understand. And I think a lot of people are like you who are like, ooh, maybe I should go find my childhood cards to see what they're worth. Is it like a foil Charizard where I can make a, you know, buy a house on it?
Yeah, I definitely don't have anything that's going to approach that level.
Yeah, gosh, some of those Pokemon cards, and really any card like that, if you've got the right one, it's going to be, oh, no, it's going to be great. I'm sorry, I said oh, no, because Sano just hit an absolute bomb to left field, and the Yankees are still up on the Twins 7-5 after Stanton hit another home run. No sooner did I say that. He's a bum, but, you know.
Yeah. Also, another piece of late-breaking news that I just saw. We're just going to mention this, put it out there, because it is MLB, it is news. I don't think we need to discuss it in depth. Trevor Bauer's leave has been extended again by MLB and the Dodgers, although the restraining order against him was denied by a judge in court today.
Yeah, that's a story I also have been following. I mean, from an on-the-field standpoint, it's certainly a touchy subject. There's still a whole ongoing process, and Nate, you're in the law field. I think you understand where we're just going to kind of let the process play itself out. And from a baseball standpoint, you know, the Dodgers, I think, have depth at pitcher. Trevor Bauer was more of a luxury for them, granted what isn't on that team. So we'll see how they respond. And quite frankly, I think the Dodgers will be just fine without them. So, you know, hopefully everything that needs to go on there goes on. And speaking of going on, I think it is time for us to go on. Nate, did you have anything last, anything you wanted to plug before we call it a night?
Yes. Check everybody's. All the Sports City Chefs out. They've got some great stuff going on right now with the NFL season coming up, previews, prognostications. So check everything out at the website, sportscitychefs.com. And to wrap up for tonight, we talked about Shohei Ohtani hitting his 40th home run. He also has 15 stolen bases. He's reached that milestone in 122 games. Dave, can you tell me the only player to reach the 40-15 plateau quicker than Shohei Ohtani?
It's got to be A-Rod or Griffey.
It is Griffey.
Ah, I knew. I got one. I did it. All right.
There we go.
All right. I'm calling it a day on that one. Nate, it was a blast talking with you. Art Vandelay, appreciate you calling in. I have said enough for a lifetime, and for the last time, I wish you all a pleasant good afternoon.
Play Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah. Sports City Chefs. been relevant, trying to